Happy Bitcoin Friday, freaks. It's your boy Odell here for another dispatch. Citadel Dispatch is the interactive live show focused on Bitcoin and freedom tech. We have two great conversations lined up for y'all today. Before we get started, I want to thank all the freaks who continue to support the show, whether that's subscribing on their favorite platform. We're now on YouTube, and we've always been on Twitch. We're on Bitcoin TV. Any podcast app, search Citadel Dispatch, press the subscribe button, share with your friends and family. It really does go a long way. And if you're supporting the show via sats, that's even more appreciated. We do not have ads or sponsors on Citadel Dispatch. We are 100% audience funded. I think it aligns the incentives really well. It's extremely powerful seeing all the support you guys continue to give the show to keep it going. The easiest way to support Dispatch is through podcasting 2.0 apps. My favorites are Fountain Podcasts, Breeze, and Podverse.fm. You simply load it up with some sats, search Citadel Dispatch, press the subscribe button, pick how many sats per minute you think Dispatch is worth, and then it automatically streams the sats to my node as you are listening. You can also support the show at CitadelDispatch.com using my BTC Pay server instance. You can pay on-chain or Lightning there. Or you can support using my Paynim, which is supported by Sparrow Wallet and Samurai Wallet. My Paynim is Odell. Very easy to remember. So thank you all for the support. Another way you can do on... So if you do podcasting 2.0 for support, it actually will split with a bunch of open source projects as well. So if you support via podcasting 2.0, a portion of your support also goes to Raspberry Blitz, RoboSats, SeedSigner, Sparrow Wallet, and Zeus. A really cool aspect of podcasting 2.0. And also it allows you to send boostergrams. Boostergrams are single payments that you can attach a message to. My understanding is that Fountain Podcasts are going to make it so we can view boostergrams from all podcasting apps. But for now, all I can see are the ones that are coming in through Fountain Podcasts. So as always, I'm going to read the top four from the last dispatch, which was also this week. If you haven't listened to that, consider going listening to that. It's about the Tornado Cash situation. We have Law Bitcoin with 50,000 sats saying, thanks for the work and advocacy the three of you are doing in the privacy space. Privacy is essential to exercising our rights. We have Rika Maru with 50,000 sats saying, Odell Seth is the best duo since Lennon McCartney. Please consider doing a regular pod together. I'm not against that idea. Appreciate you, freak. We have Chad Farrow with 60,000 sats because he sent two boosts of 30,000 sats. He said the first boost failed, so here's another. And then I also see the first boost, which says, keep up the great work. Thanks, Chad. And we have Roughneck Miner with 5,000 sats saying, you guys run the best pod in the space. I learned more here than any other pod. Keep pushing the boundaries, and I'll keep sending sats. Also, huge shout out to all the freaks who supported that I did not read. I love you all. Couldn't do without you. And a huge shout out to all the freaks who continue to join us in the live chat. So the live chat is an interesting aspect of the show. It is broadcast out to everybody so everyone can see the live chat. The live chat, you can participate either on our YouTube feed or our Twitch feed or the Matrix chat if you don't want to use a big tech platform. To access the Matrix chat, you go to CitadelDispatch.com and click that Citadel.chat button. Okay, with all that said, there was crazy privacy news today. I will be covering that later in the afternoon with Rockstar Dev. But I'm fortunate enough to have Captain Sid here in the studio at Bitcoin Park. And we are going to be talking about grassroots Bitcoin adoption this morning, a little bit of a happier topic. How's it going, Sid?
Good morning, Matt. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. This is Dispatch 73 and I still I think every time I do that intro, so it's a little bit different. I used to have it written down, and now I just kind of fucking wing it.
Yeah, well, you did a great job. I mean, you have enough practice now; you can just rip it out, it on the fly.
So, Sid, I'm pretty excited about this conversation. The first time we met was what, like 4 months ago or 5 months ago in Nashville?
Yeah, when I came through Nashville on the trip.
Yeah,
we met at, forget the name of the bar, but
that was a good time. We did like a spontaneous meetup. It wasn't, we didn't have anything planned. It was just like Captain Sid's in town. We got all meet up.
Tommy made a little piece of artwork and that was it.
Yeah.
We were off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, he made a piece of artwork on a pizza box, right?
Yeah. And I think sold it to Mills, and that's what paid for the drinks.
There you go. I love it. So Sid, you I don't know where to start here. I guess you bought a motorcycle and you rode it from Florida to California.
Yeah, it's a little bit in between.
And you stopped at as many Bitcoin meetups as you could along the way.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's pretty fucking baller.
Yeah, it was great. I think I've never really been able to claim that I have authority in any space, but I've been to 30 meetups. I don't think there's any Bitcoiner that's been to more meetups in America than I have at this point. And I hope someone breaks that
definitely
record.
A Bitcoin meetup specialist now.
Yeah, now I can claim that title, which is cool. Yeah, so I've been living abroad for the last 2.5 years. And I really wanted to see America again, see what had happened. I've been gone since 2019, so I missed all of COVID and everything. And I watched all of that happen through Twitter. And I wanted to see what is the country like on the ground. So I thought, what better way to do that than through a road trip? And I fell in love with riding motorcycles while I was abroad. So I figured, let me buy a big American bike, a big touring bike, and go all around the country. And also on Twitter, I saw the rise of all these Bitcoin meetups. And when I left, there really weren't that many. There was a couple bit devs, but I don't remember there being small Bitcoin meetups all over the place. And I looked at a map and there's like 40, 45, 50 Bitcoin meetups. And now there's even more. As I was going on the trip, I kept discovering new ones. So I thought, why not try to link these together and meet Bitcoiners all over the country?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty amazing to watch over the last few years because, I mean, you're completely correct that the meetups, I like to call it grassroots Bitcoin adoption has just absolutely exploded throughout the world. Like we see similar happening in Germany and India and Latin America. And it happened, it's crazy to me because it happened at the same time that like the majority of the world was stepping back from in-person social interaction. So like events were getting canceled, weddings were getting canceled, concerts were getting canceled. They were closing down small businesses, but at the same time, Bitcoin meetups were growing, which is absolutely crazy to think about.
Yeah. And it's also completely agnostic of market and price. Over the entire ride, the price has been going down of Bitcoin, but I've seen, and from what I've heard from meetup organizers, it's level, if not increasing in attendance. More people are interested in this and asking questions. And I think meetups have really hit on a new chord for the potential Bitcoin community. There's a lot of people out there who do not want to learn about Bitcoin by reading a bunch of articles online.
Right.
And I think all of us who got in, who are in it now, you and I, who are very interested in Bitcoin, we were those types of people because we had to be. There was no other way to learn.
Right. But you had no option.
Yeah, you had no option. You had to just read articles or at best talk with people on Twitter or some sort of online medium. But there's a whole crop of people out there who don't learn like that, who want to go meet people in person and hear, what is this thing? I want to sit down and look you in the eyes and have you explain to me how this works and answer my questions. And meetups are hitting right on that.
And also, obviously conversations are great. I think a lot of times people overthink it, just like having beers with local Bitcoiners is just a fulfilling experience.
Yeah.
But like also the in-person workshops, I feel like are really powerful. Like actually having someone, you know, have a wallet in their hands and be able to like feel it in person is, it's just way easier to learn that way.
Yeah. And I've seen every meetup seems to start with exactly that.
Drinks together, at a bar, right?
Drinks at a bar, a couple people, but they grow from there. And eventually when you have a meetup page and a Twitter account, you start attracting people who don't know anything about Bitcoin. And then the workshops kind of start naturally from that as well. When you get 10, 15 people in a room and you start walking around and asking, what are you interested in learning about? And then you hear a lot of people are interested in nodes, or they are interested in mining, or they want to learn how wallets work. And then workshops kind of come out of that. And that's one of the really cool things I've noticed at meetups is it doesn't really feel forced anywhere I've been. It's not that meetup organizers have these grand machinations for right. what they're going to build, and they're trying to, you know, get people somehow to come to their event with free food or whatever. It's very organic. So there's a lot of ambition among meetup organizers about what they'd like to do, but it's all happening at the right time when people are asking for it, coming around and saying, we want speakers, we want workshops on this and that. And it's very much a back and forth with the community.
Very organic is the word.
Yeah, organic.
There's no like top-down Bitcoin organization that is building out these meetups.
Exactly. And it leads to a lot more ingenuity, I think, too. There's like every meetup has some crazy idea for some new thing they want to do.
So let's, you started, was it 30 meetups? Was that the total amount you've been to?
I think 31.
31.
San Francisco that I was on the bike for.
And so you started in Florida? Started in Texas? You started in Florida?
Started in Florida at the Bitcoin conference.
At Bitcoin 2022.
Yeah. And then we actually did a mega meetup there. So I organized a meetup of everyone who goes to their local meetups. That's how I kind of build it. And I was hoping maybe I'd get 100 signups at an Eventbrite page. It was just a free event in the lobby of the convention center. And I got 996 signups.
Holy shit.
And about 150 people, probably maybe 200 people came through, which was incredible. I got to meet a lot of the meetup organizers there before I started.
You got to coordinate basically ahead of time and get put a face to a name.
Exactly. Yeah. And see who are the real meetup organizers who really are doing this for Bitcoin, who want me to come versus, you know, I might see a Twitter page out there that says it's a Bitcoin meetup, but you start digging in and you're like, oh, it's a shitcoin meetup or for whatever.
Right, I mean, and that was very common for a long time. That was like Bitcoin in name only.
Yeah.
One of the crazier things is not just Bitcoin meetups blowing up, but Bitcoin only meetups blowing up. That they're not blockchain meetups. They're not crypto meetups. They're not talking about NFTs. This is a Bitcoin meetup.
Yeah. And they're very, very different in flavor and discussion.
I mean, before we move on, I realized I didn't highlight that point that you make, that attendance seems to be at least flatline, if not going up in a down market, is a pretty astounding, fact. Because I mean, I remember, you know, I used to be part of the New York Bitcoin community, and we had New York BitDevs, which was the first BitDevs, super technical conversation, no photos. No videos allowed to be taken, no price talk allowed. So like the type of meetup that you would think is most immune to price. And even that meetup was like when the price would drop, the attendance would drop like 50% or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when price was pumping, we'd be like filled to the brim and you couldn't.
Yeah.
There was no space.
Well, I think the macro environment is also changing really quickly. Over the last 2 years, the freedom, self-sovereignty, censorship-resistant aspect of Bitcoin has really been highlighted, especially in America. We didn't have much of a reason for that before 2020, and now we see, you know, just the country above us doing crazy things with people's bank accounts with, you know, no reason. So,
the country that must not be named.
Yeah,
I like referring to them as the country above us. I'm gonna adopt that.
Go for it.
I think that's definitely part of it, right? It's not just, I mean, we had Maulers here last month, and I said, like, as a CEO of one of the fastest growing Bitcoin companies, like, how do you handle building, you know, being sustainable in a bear market? And he was like, Matt, this isn't a bear market. This is a fucking macro recession. Like, this is a completely different environment than like a traditional Bitcoin bear market.
Yeah.
So I feel like in a lot of ways, even if the price is down, people are like, well, this is my hope. Right. This is like this is what keeps me optimistic in this crazy world. Like, I'm even more focused on it now than I would be while it was pumping, maybe. Or
yeah, the price is down, but so is the price of everything else too. Exactly. Even if you look at it just purely from an investment perspective, if you were DCAing for a couple of years, you're probably better off in Bitcoin than you would have been in any other asset.
So we have a comment from Weird Robot, who I got to, it was a pleasure to meet him last month. He was visiting Nashville. He says, any recommendations to do that sort of traveling without spending a shit ton of money?
Yeah.
I mean, you made money on this whole thing, right?
I broke even.
You broke it.
Minus the motorcycle.
Everybody's a scammer. Well, I mean, you bought the motorcycle, right?
Yeah.
But now you're selling the motorcycle.
But I'm selling the motorcycle at some point. So hopefully I will have made money in sats.
And you got sponsored by Swan and the magazine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and Unchained and Upstream Data. They threw in a lot. Yeah,
everyone's a scammer. So and the cool thing is this bike, as you went along the meetups, like everyone signed it. Like my signature's on that bike.
Your signature's on there? I mean, there's probably like 300-400 signatures on both bags now.
Yeah, so I mean, there's probably a good argument that bike's worth more than when you bought it.
That's the dream. Yeah. That's the hope. Yeah, so.
Maybe just hold on to it for a little bit. Like the collector value would probably go up a little bit.
Yeah, that's
especially if the Bitcoin price goes up.
I'm going to hold the saddlebags for sure, because those can just pop off of the bike too, so I can keep those. But I do actually have some thoughts on this.
That's what I signed. I signed the saddlebag.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you signed the saddlebags. I made sure everyone signed just the bags, because the bags you can just take off.
Everyone's a scammer.
And then the bike is the bike. So. Yeah, you know.
I should have signed both sides.
Well, somebody brought up to me, I should auction the saddlebags separately and see which one gets more money, like which one has the more coveted signatures.
Ooh. Well, I imagine together they're worth more.
Yeah.
Just from a collector's point of view. So anyway, let's answer this guy's question.
Yeah. So traveling without spending a shit ton of money, the biggest thing that I saved money on this trip, which was totally unforeseen, and I would have lost money if it weren't for this, was just the hospitality of Bitcoiners. We talk a lot about privacy and security and don't trust Verify, but a lot of Bitcoiners open their homes to me, not having never met me, and let me stay with their families, sleep in their guest bedroom.
Fucking insane.
Which was not something I expected at all, but definitely helped, because especially with inflation this year, if I had to pay for hotels, my trip cost would have been like 50% more than what it was. Would have been insane. So that helped a lot. And I think it was kind of a reputation thing. At the beginning of the trip, it was a little bit harder. And then as I went on the trip and more people heard about it, and more people heard, you know, I stayed with this Bitcoin.
It was like a web of trust. It was like everyone's like, oh, he's a good dude. And if it's like someone that respected says that, then.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, as long as I don't break that reputation, then I can get a lot of benefit out of it. So I would say just reach out to Bitcoiners. Are more hospitable than you might think, especially if you're really into the privacy side. As I was, I used to work at Kraken, and they just drilled it into you.
That I didn't know that.
If you ever talk about Bitcoin, you're going to get stabbed in the back, and they're going to take your
Jesse takes it super seriously.
Yeah, I mean the whole company, the entire grain of the company. It's a cybersecurity company. They're very intense about security. So I used to be so paranoid about talking about Bitcoin, but that's not my personality at all. I want to talk about it. I want to have in-person interactions about Bitcoin. So when I started this trip, I was kind of still in that mind that most Bitcoiners are not going to want to. They're going to build a wall, and they're not going to let me into their homes or meet their families or real names or any of that. And I found that it was totally different. Once they trust you, it's like you're good until you break that trust.
Yeah, I mean, there's this amazing part about being active in the Bitcoin community that you almost feel like you have family in every city in the world.
Yeah, I do. I definitely do now.
Super powerful. Exactly. Like I was saying, we were just in Norway or whatever. We met a bunch of awesome Norwegian Bitcoiners. And I was like, if I got stuck in this country, like there'd be a ton of beds that I could crash on or couches or whatever. Just because we have family everywhere. It's super powerful.
Yeah.
And the other thing you did to save money that was really cool was cooking steaks on the road.
People love this. So it was at the
Beef and Badass.
Yeah. Every single podcast, every single conversation I have about this tour, people are like, tell me about cooking the steak. So I went to the Beef Initiative conference, the first one in Kerrville, Texas. And while I was there, I was talking to Slim about like eating beef on the road and how he eats healthy on the road if you're trying to avoid all this processed food, but processed food is everywhere. And he said, well, I bring like a cast iron skillet and a little hot plate and I'll cook in my hotel room. So I was thinking, well, I could buy that kit and kind of store it on my motorcycle. I didn't have much space, but I could maybe fit it on there. And then I was talking to the chef at the Beef Initiative about cooking on the road. And he said, man, you got an engine. You can cook on it. It generates heat. Just get a, like, wrap something in foil and strap it to the exhaust pipe and it'll cook over a couple hours. And he told me to look up manifold cooking. And sure enough, it's not just a one-off thing people do. It's a whole like type of cuisine. There's cookbooks on manifold cooking. It's kind of like Dutch oven cooking where you don't really know what temperature you're cooking right at, low and slow, and you just...
It's like it's a metal box, right? That you just, mm-hmm. you slap a steak in there, you attach it. What piece are you attaching?
The one I got is called a muff pot.
So you attach it to like the muffler, right?
You attach it to the exhaust pipe right where it comes out of the cylinder.
So it's super hot.
Super hot.
And then you're like just driving on the road and 3 hours later your steak is cooked.
Yeah, like exactly. When I arrived in Nashville on the tour, I had a perfectly cooked pink steak all the way through.
That's a nice hack. Especially, I mean, if you're biking, that's a great hack.
Yeah. If you've got any engine. I mean, other than a Tesla, if you've got any engine that
you can attach it to your car or whatever,
it's even easier on a car because the way car engines are usually set up, like say you have a four cylinder or a six cylinder, the exhaust manifold usually comes out kind of flat out of the side and it's just like a grill. So you can wrap potatoes and foil and steaks and just throw them on there. You don't need a box or anything. You just need foil.
Well, that's awesome. Well, that's a good life hack. There you go, freaks. That'll save you some money.
Yeah.
So where were we? So you started in Florida, and then where'd you go from there?
So from Florida, I blasted all the way to Texas.
Right.
In 5 days from Miami to Dallas. Wouldn't do it again, but it was a good trial by fire.
There was something you needed to get there for, right?
So I knew when I was planning this that it would be kind of difficult to reschedule meetups, especially really big meetups. And the Houston and Austin meetups were just perfectly timed, like 2 weeks after Bitcoin 2022 and 1 week after each other. So I went to Austin BitDevs and then the big Houston meetup. So I went to Dallas first and then Austin, then Houston, spent about a week in each, then back to Dallas for a BitBlock barbecue. And then I headed east again, back across Tennessee and North Carolina.
And that's when I saw you.
Yeah.
And then after that, where'd you go from there?
So through North Carolina, went to Asheville, Charlotte, Raleigh, and then up north to Ohio through Virginia, West Virginia, and then did the Midwest.
It's such an awesome path.
Yeah, it was really nice. I totally avoided the East Coast. Weirdly enough, I didn't see any Bitcoin meetups on the East Coast other than New York. There's New York BitDevs, and there's a Harlem meetup.
But yeah, there's a new Harlem one.
Yeah, and there's a Philly meetup actually too in Philadelphia, and some people in D.C., but I just thought, you know what? It's a really long slog to get up there for a few meetups. So I just headed through the Midwest instead.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some new meetups pop up there. There's to freaks who are looking for like a meetup in their area. I have a Twitter list. If you go to my Twitter account and go to lists, I have a Twitter list called Grassroots Bitcoin that I've just been adding meetup accounts as I find them. And if there's not a meetup in your area, consider starting one. As we said earlier, it's as easy as putting up a meetup page, sending out a tweet, and meeting at a bar somewhere with a couple of Bitcoiners and starting from there. And I usually will... people who have done this before know that I hate when someone sends me a tweet to retweet in DMs. Like usually, if it's a tweet that I was going to retweet anyway, I will intentionally not retweet it because you sent it to me in DMs and it pisses me off. But if you're starting a meetup, that's excluded. So if you send me a tweet because you're starting a meetup, I will happily give you more exposure on that. I met a ride or die freak in Texas who was from Boston, and older individual. That's what he did. He was like, I don't have any Bitcoin only meetups in like the greater Boston area or the outside of Boston. He's like in the suburbs or something. And he was like, what should I do? And I was like, just start a meetup. He's like, I'm going to do it. And he started it. And it seems like he's getting some traction, which is really fucking cool. Awesome. Do you have any bad experiences with the meetups?
At meetups? No, not at all. Which was also another surprising thing. I thought I would accidentally go to a shitcoin meetup or meet more, you know, degenerate gambler types. But
yeah,
I was shocked. I rarely ran into anyone who wasn't a ride or die Bitcoiner that was really into it. And I think we talk a lot, well, recently about the whole maximalism thing and, you know, toxicity. What is a Bitcoiner and toxicity and all that. And I found that at meetups, and probably because it's in person, that the negativity of that world just disappears. People are much more positive. They're focused on building a future that's better for them and their communities. And you lose a lot of that. People just ignore the shit coins. It's not like,
do you think it's a Bitcoin specific thing, or do you think like Twitter is just set up in a way that it brings out like the worst in people?
Yeah, I think it's because Twitter brings out the worst in people, honestly. Yeah. I don't think people are really like that usually. I mean, I wrote a little bit about doom versus doing. On Twitter, there's so much dooming. There's so much, because that's what it feeds and engenders.
It's the extremes on both sides. It's like the doom and then like the bullshit hopium.
Yeah, or the puppy videos.
They get like the most, that gets the most engagement.
Yeah, yeah. So it pulls those types of things out. And in person, the extremes don't work very well, at least the negative extremes.
Right.
People don't want to hang out with you if you're just always depressing like that. So it's just a much more...
No one wants to have a three-hour conversation over beers talking about like just dooming all day.
Yeah, exactly. It's not,
or like shitting on
not
people.
A good way to live your life. So yeah. Meetups are much more focused on what can we do here and now in our community to push this forward.
Yeah, I mean, I experienced that firsthand because the other day we had like 200 people at the park and we were having like a great time or whatever. And I like didn't look at Twitter all day. And then I opened Twitter and there was like all this bullshit drama of like people fighting back and forth and arguing about all this shit. And I was just like, well, I guess I'm winning. I'm just going to sign off again.
Exactly. I feel like meetup organizers and people that go to these meetups, they're the true winners in Bitcoin because they're getting to move forward on Bitcoin and make progress without all of that toxicity and back and forth and negativity. Are we still running? Yeah. I'll say a few things about starting a meetup as well, because as I went to different meetups, I started to get an idea of what the whole space looks like. And I think a lot of people who are thinking about starting a meetup, it sounds kind of difficult because you have to get everyone together and get a venue and all
these overwhelming.
Things. Sounds overwhelming. Exactly. That's the word I'm looking for. It sounds overwhelming. You can start a meetup by just going to a bar with a few Bitcoiners. So that alone is fine. Now, I understand getting from that to a bigger meetup can also seem overwhelming, but there's a lot of coordination that's happening between meetups that I'm seeing. So like, for example, in the Midwest, there's a Midwest Bitcoiners group, and it's mostly people who go to their local meetups. So it's people from Minneapolis all the way to Ohio and everywhere in between. And they're all talking about Bitcoin and about their different meetups and sharing ideas. So if you're starting a meetup, it's good to get integrated into those regional spaces because they're going to have more time and attention for their own region. It's harder if you just go out on Twitter and you try to advertise your meetup because you're advertising it to everyone all over the world.
Right.
But in those smaller groups, you're talking
to really someone in like India doesn't really like, they don't need to know you're running a Asheville meetup.
Like maybe they might be in Lexington, Kentucky
right.
at some point in their life, but it's probably not not going to happen. But if you're in Lexington connecting with Southern Bitcoiners, then you might have people from Nashville that'll come up for your meetup.
Yeah, I mean, we see that a lot here as we've been building out the Nashville meetup. So this meetup that we had on Wednesday was officially the 1 year anniversary.
Wow. Congratulations.
1 year of Nash Bitcoiners. And I wasn't here for the first one. So the first one was in August of last year. And I started coming down in September. I came for the second one. I missed October, and then I've been to everyone since then. And so the August one was 35 people in the rain at a brewery outside. And now it's averaging over 200 people within a year. And one of the cool things that we've seen happen is there's a lot of people that come from cities within like a 6 hour radius, including meetup organizers. So they come from 6 hour radius. They didn't have a meetup in their area, or maybe it was a small meetup. And then they go back home and then they create a meetup in their local town. So like we had the Knoxville Bitcoin meetup pop up. We had the Huntsville Bitcoin meetup pop up. Asheville Bitcoiners popped up. And then they all come here and then we all kind of coordinate together or talk and share experiences and help boost each other. And like the whole region is kind of growing organically, but together, like everyone empowers each other, right?
Exactly. I think it's about empowerment and helping people get through different issues that they're having or give them ideas for things that they could run or ways that they can grow their meetup.
And we're going to actually, if you're a meetup organizer and I haven't reached out to you already, reach out to me. We're doing like a summit for meetup organizers in September here in Nashville, which I'm pretty excited about, which we're also calling Grassroots Bitcoin.
That's going to be awesome.
But yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I think that's a really good recommendation. Just to, like, if you're starting a meetup, consider going to meetups like within a 4 or 5 hour range. If you jump in the car, grab a friend or something, go to an established meetup that's somewhere in the region.
One other thing I'll say is, even if there's a meetup in your city, you can start another one.
100%.
And I've seen this in a couple places. Like I went to a small one in Houston where they have a very large meetup that's focused on the energy sector. And this small meetup is more, it's at a co-working space. It's around a big table. It's more conversational. It just attracts a different crowd, people who don't thrive in these big meet and greet type of scenarios. And they want to have a smaller, deeper discussion with more technical people or, you know, what have you. So they've started another meetup. It's thriving. They're talking to other meetup organizers, but you can do your own thing if you want to. I think the Bay Area also does this well because it's so spread out.
The Bay Area does a really interesting, right? Because there's like an affiliation of a bunch of little meetups under Bay Area Bitcoiners.
Exactly, which makes so much sense for a large metro area. Like maybe Nashville, not so much because it's pretty easy to get to downtown Nashville. But like Dallas, Fort Worth should be doing this because if you live in Fort Worth, to come to downtown Dallas can be an hour both ways.
Right.
And same with the Bay Area. To come to San Francisco, if you live in the North Bay, it can be easily an hour and a half drive both ways.
Yeah, it's really interesting what the Bay Area Bitcoiners did. I would say that I do not expect it to be replicated on, you know, I mean, they did it in a very... It's like very cohesive and professional. Mm-hmm. They're like affiliation thing that's going on over there. But I do see all the time, and this is something we talk about in Bitcoin in general, not just meetups, just more options, the better, right? And I mean, I saw when I used to live in New York, like we had BitDevs, which was like our highly technical, you know, 200 person meetup that happened once a month. But then it was like, a bunch of Bitcoiners started another meetup that was just like a weekly, let's get drunk. Let's just meet up at the bar after work and drink and talk Bitcoin. And they all fill different purposes. And it makes the whole thing more robust and more distributed, right? If you have more options in different areas.
Yep.
You don't want like one person or a group of people controlling maybe Bitcoin conversations in a city, yep. Right?
It attracts different types of people. It engenders different conversations, all these different formats. So yeah, the more meetups, the better.
Do you, So I asked you if you had any bad experiences. Did you have any particularly positive experiences? Was there anything that caught you, like when you think back?
Yeah, I will. I mean, every meetup was a positive experience, but I'll name one city in particular that was incredibly hospitable, which was Milwaukee. So I was super excited to go to Milwaukee because it's the home of Harley Davidson as well. Right. So I went on the way from Chicago to Minneapolis. I stopped in Milwaukee for two nights. And the first night, there was nowhere for me to stay with the meetup organizers. One of the meetup organizers offered a long time ago to put me up. And then when I got the exact dates down, he was like, well, we're both out of town, so we have nowhere to put you up. And so they put me up at the Iron Horse Hotel, which is a Harley-themed hotel, like across the bridge from Harley's original factory.
Awesome.
So it was so sweet, paid for it and everything. They took me out that night. Some people from the meetup met up with me and took me out, showed me Milwaukee. I learned so much about that city and what they're trying to do there. And they were just incredibly hospitable the whole time I was there. It was amazing.
Wow. Shout out Milwaukee Bitcoiners.
Yeah, great, great meetup.
You got the Captain Sid massive endorsement over here. So what else do you want to talk about?
Let's see.
I don't have anywhere to go right now, but I'm enjoying this conversation.
So one thing I came upon a lot while I was on the road is just how to talk to normal people about Bitcoin.
Okay.
You know? And I found, for one, that...
Probably shouldn't call them normal people right before you do it. Continue.
I mean, you call your listeners freaks.
Right? Yeah.
So how do you
Hello,
talk about...
normal
how
person. Do you talk to Have you heard of Bitcoin?
Yeah. That's usually how I open the conversation, and that's maybe why it didn't go so well. But so I would usually open with the motorcycle trip, because I found if I just start talking about Bitcoin, people shut down. They don't want to hear about it.
Right.
And I kind of figured that out after 2017 and it started to crash. If you talk about Bitcoin, people are like, shut up about your Ponzi scam.
Right.
So when I started with a motorcycle trip, it kind of disarmed people, and then they became more interested in, you know, they're interested in the trip.
Who doesn't like a cross-country motorcycle trip?
Exactly. Everyone is interested in that topic. So then when I combine it with Bitcoin, then they're like, oh, okay, well, maybe there's something more to this that I'm missing. So I would talk about the local community, and you know, people had the same common misconceptions of like, well, who organizes all the meetups? And I had to try to explain to them, nobody from the top is organizing these. It's individuals who want to meet up and talk about this open source protocol. And I had
some Gary Kay in the comments, by the way, saying that they prefer to be called normies.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I should use that label next time. Hey, normie, let me talk to you about Bitcoin. So I kind of made that a theme of the tour. Like, don't talk about Bitcoin until someone really starts asking you about it, and try to understand who they are. And I also got that from meeting Texas Slim from the Beef Initiative.
I was going to say that you sound like Slim right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Seems like I don't talk to ranchers about Bitcoin. I just talk to them about life.
Exactly. He nails it. He's like, just talk to people about their lives and what they're concerned about, and then try to relate that to Bitcoin. But don't just push Bitcoin on people, because they don't want to hear it. They think it's a scam, and then it feels more like a multi-level marketing. You're just trying to rope them in because you're not interested in them. You just want to sell what you want to sell. So I found that to be a much better style for just opening conversations about what I was doing and what Bitcoin is and why it matters so much to me.
I mean, I guess your bike also said Bitcoin on it, like all over the place, right?
Not really. I mean, it had the Swan Bitcoin logo on it.
And the Bitcoin Magazine logo on it, right?
And the Bitcoin Magazine logo, but yeah, Bitcoin Magazine, that logo said Bitcoin pretty big.
Yeah.
But if you're just looking at the bike, you wouldn't immediately see that it was about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I went in with preconceived notions. I'm trying to think of when I first saw the bike. I was like, oh, it's a Bitcoin bike.
Well, when you see the orange saddlebags in the Bitcoin orange, and you're a Bitcoiner.
What do you think about Bitcoin orange? Was that a mistake?
Oh, I love it.
People are very, I think it's a love-hate thing. It's like,
really?
Either love it or hate it.
I have not encountered that. Well, I haven't really encountered opinions about it. It's just there. It's kind of like 21 million.
Like, we like to talk about the hard topics on Dispatch.
Yeah, I like it because it's bright.
It's really bright. Yeah. I mean, it's a very aggressive color.
It's like the rising sun. All right. You know, it's a new dawn. It's a new dawn that we're
so looking. So when Bitcoin does, how do you, if you were going to pitch Bitcoin to someone after, so I guess naturally, like you're having that conversation, right? And then Bitcoin eventually comes up. What's your quick pitch on Bitcoin?
So I heard a really good one that I'm just going to shamelessly rip from someone in Charlotte.
The best ones, yeah.
Yeah, so someone in Charlotte, this was, you know, early this year. So inflation was really popping off. And they said, it was something like, you ask somebody, you know, you say the Fed has printed 40% of all the money in circulation, of all the dollars in circulation in the last year. Did your bank account go up by 40%? Did your 401k go up by 40%? Your stock portfolio, your house, all these different assets. Maybe one of them did. Maybe you live in a really nice neighborhood and your house price went up 40%. But everything across the board did not go up 40%. So where did that value go? Someone else took it from you. That's what money printing is. And that's what Bitcoin fights. When you buy Bitcoin, they can't do that to you. And I thought that was a really clear, everyone understands that from the bartender to the investor, because everyone, you know, looks at their income, their assets, and they see, oh, that didn't go up. And you can look at a chart that verifiably says the dollar to some extent went up 40%
right
in supply. That's so somebody else has those extra dollars.
That's a tactic I very rarely go down the inflation. But I guess it's like hot right now, right?
Yeah, it's topical, like
it's a mainstream topic all of a sudden.
And I think that is, like, fortunately or unfortunately, part of the game. If you want people to become interested in Bitcoin, you have to hit on something that's topical or something that really matters to them, or they're not going to care. Because if you hit on what matters to you, they might not care about it. And
so usually when I, if I am tasked with talking to someone who is kind of Bitcoin curious, I try not to. I'm past the point in my Bitcoin life where I try and convince someone they need Bitcoin. So I only really talk about Bitcoin with people that already recognize they're curious about it. They recognize that there is some kind of need for better money.
Yeah.
But usually what I line into is that it's just ridiculous, this idea that you need to either be a financial guru or hire someone that is to manage like this diversified portfolio to protect your wealth and all that bullshit that entails. And that at its core, like, Bitcoin is immensely simple, mm-hmm. right? Like, I feel like we get dragged down into, I mean, obviously I've spent hours, days, years going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, and there's a million different things. There are different directions you can go down, and no one ever learns everything there is about Bitcoin. But to me, the promise of Bitcoin is that it's extremely simple, and that you're able to just live your life and do whatever you're passionate about. And then at the end of the day, save in better money, spend in better money, and you just don't even have to think about it. You just stack, and if everything goes as we expect it to go, it should increase in purchasing power over time, and you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
And I think that resonates with people because there's just such a mental burden. Like, our day-to-day lives are just filled with so much bullshit that if you can cut out that one aspect, all of a sudden you're freeing yourself up to actually live your life to the fullest.
Yeah. I met a lot of people on this trip that don't even understand that you need a financial advisor to make it, though.
Right.
You know, either because they're, and this is all over crypto, they think, well, you just have to buy a lotto ticket. They don't understand that
right.
anything has ever been different. Or they just don't understand, like, the impact of inflation. I met a surprising amount of people that are they just deal with dollars. Like a Harley sales guy, I asked him, he said, you know, I'm a traditional guy. My son, you know, watches YouTube about Bitcoin a lot, but I don't really understand it. I just deal with cash. And then later I asked him,
So, like, he just holds cash.
Yeah. I was like, well, you know, what, you have a family, like, what assets do you have? Do you buy stocks or whatever? And he said, no, I told you, I just have cash. He literally has cash in a mattress and in the bank. That's it. And
that's a losing strategy.
Faced with inflation, he just doesn't know what to do. You know, so, and I think he's an older guy. I think he just thought cash is king. You just have cash and then you're fine
because
you
can spend it. Inflation hasn't been horrible.
Inflation hasn't been terrible. This is just how the world works. They don't think about.
But it's that same thing. He doesn't want the mental burden. He doesn't even want to consider it, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. But he doesn't even consider it.
I guess what I mean, especially with the younger people, it's like so normalized now that they have like a Robinhood account and they're like picking random stocks. Like, I was like chilling with a buddy from high school and he's like showing me his like Robinhood portfolio and he's got like random like Chinese electric car manufacturers and stuff. I was like, how'd you pick this one? And he's like, oh, well, Reddit said like I should just like buy it or whatever. And he's aware that the inflation's an issue and that he needs to do all this shit. And I'm like, I already told you about Bitcoin. You already own Bitcoin. Just fucking stay humble and stack sats. Don't fucking deal with this shit.
It's a fiat mentality, I think. You think that gambling is the only way out because you're sitting on a melting ice cube and even investing in
the melting ice
S&P 500. Meme. Yeah. I mean, even a stock is a melting ice cube. If you really want to grow your wealth, you got to get out there and gamble. And that's sort of what you're build in my generation.
Right. I mean, the whole, like the fiat economists, that's what they say is like inflation is necessary because it like basically forces you not to save.
Yeah.
You either have to invest or spend.
Yeah. And invest in riskier and riskier stuff to get the same return.
Well, the comments are popping off right now.
Normalist.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. It's a know your audience kind of thing, right? Like, it's not a one size fits all. Bitcoin is different things to different people. And
exactly. It'll
click for, I remember when it's interesting, like, how, like, as you go down your Bitcoin journey, Bitcoin changes for yourself too. Like, when I first got into Bitcoin, I was looking at it and, like I like to gamble, with like poker and sports betting and stuff like that. And I looked at Bitcoin as simply a ideal way to deposit and withdraw from gambling websites. Like that's what clicked for me. I was like, cause the US government used Visa and MasterCard and all the traditional payment rails to block deposits and withdrawals from online gambling sites. And I was like, well, if Bitcoin is just used by American gamblers, just used by American, it should be pretty successful. And like that was my entry into the rabbit hole. And obviously now like Bitcoin is so much more than that to me. Mm-hmm. That's just a tiny little use case of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that's how people get onboarded, honestly, is they find something that solves a real need for them immediately.
Right.
They start using it. They get a little more comfortable with it. They, you know, now they're disarmed to reading an article about it because they don't think it's just some Ponzi scheme. They're like, wow, this actually solves a real need in my life.
Right.
Then they start learning more and more about it. And eventually they end up as far down the rabbit hole as you or I are.
Right.
You know, but it starts with just something that hits on a real need for
it
them.
Clicks. Yeah.
It clicks. Yeah.
We talk about that a lot, that like, I think everyone will eventually come to the conclusion and realize the need for better money. I don't really think we need to convince people of the need, because they will I don't think outward facing Bitcoin marketing is really that necessary, to convince pre-coiners to become coiners. I think what's more necessary is that when they realize the need, we have the tools and education ready for them, to make that as easy a process, accessible a process as possible.
Yeah.
Is kind of the framing I've been looking at lately.
Yeah, that's kind of how I think about it too. Like the door is there, you can open it, but they have to walk through it.
Right.
You just make it easy to do that. That's what we can do. Like I wrote a whole website about economics and finance.
Really?
With that in mind. Yeah. It's called whatismoney.info. And basically what I wanted to do is rebuild like Investopedia and The Balance to address economics questions like what is inflation or how does fractional reserve banking work, and answer it in a truthful way that actually exposes that, oh, our monetary system is complete BS.
Oh, wow. You got a lot of stuff on here.
Yeah, there's like 30 something articles that I wrote.
Damn.
And the idea is that people will come to it through Google by asking questions. So they'll Google things like Cantillon effect because they hear it somewhere. And then they'll end up on my site reading about what that is. And I've never really mentioned Bitcoin until the very end of an article. And then I'll start talking about solutions. And what if we had, you know, a monetary system that at the base layer solved for this inflation that causes all these other problems? If that existed, that would be a great solution to that. Oh, by the way, there's this thing called Bitcoin that is exactly that.
That's interesting. I love how Bitcoiners have like all these different... So did you do all these different projects? Did you do this before or after the ride?
This was before. I wrote all this in 2020.
I love it.
Yeah, and put up some YouTube videos too that kind of mirror the articles.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's been fun to do. It's an insanely rewarding experience to write all that content and then just watch people find it. Watch the Google search console. You can see people finding articles and watch articles blow up and people find it interesting and useful. It's really cool.
Let's talk about Winsome Hacks. Just don't run up to someone looking all sweaty and fervent and say, have you heard of our Lord and Savior Bitcoin? We touched on the beef initiative. It's something that I've been diving into pretty hard. I was just at the Colorado one. What are your thoughts there? I mean, it's crazy because it's like all these different elements of empowering yourself as an individual all kind of coming together, and Bitcoin is just a small portion of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. At the Colorado thing, my understanding was that was a bigger Bitcoin portion than usual, and it was like, you know, maybe 10% of the content or 15% of the content.
Yeah, I love what they're doing with the Beef Initiative in that they're bringing these parallel communities who kind of understand the ethos behind Bitcoin, but ranchers are a great example of probably the last people who would ever really seriously read about or get curious about Bitcoin, because they're not technical people. They're out in the field working with their hands. They're not the finance tech people that gravitate to and get interested in something like Bitcoin. And they're, to my understanding, scammed a lot by technologies and, you know, newfangled things that people say you need this for your farm or your ranch. So they do not want anything to do with Bitcoin. The Beef Initiative bridges that and shows them that actually 90% of your values line up perfectly with how Bitcoin operates. So you should understand what this is. But Slim has done it really well in that you also need to know that Bitcoiners understand you. Before we just start pitching, we want you to know that we're interested in beef, we're interested in food, we're interested in getting to the root, to, as Slim says, the seed of the soil of the seed or something like that, like all the way down to the seed and the soil.
He's got a bunch of sayings.
Yeah, he's got all these catchphrases, like where does what you're eating come from?
Shake your rancher's hand.
Exactly. And shake your hand. I mean, that lines up perfectly with Bitcoin meetups, like shake a Bitcoiner's hand.
Go, yeah, shake a local Bitcoiner's hand.
Exactly. Go meet real Bitcoiners in person.
That's an interesting perspective that you had, because I actually a little bit thought the opposite. So I've done a lot of work with activists, and activists is very fulfilling work because, first of all, I mean, you do not have to explain why Bitcoin is needed. I mean, they have a massive need for censorship-resistant money that can be transferred around the world, mm-hmm. across borders, and not be stopped by like the authoritarians that they're fighting against. They just want to be told, you know, what tools are available to them and how they can use those tools. And with ranchers, it felt very similar to me. Like I taught, I did a Bitcoin 101 in Colorado at Jason Reich's ranch, small family ranch, like 300 acres. He stewards like the surrounding 4,000 acres. It's just a humble 300 acre ranch.
Yeah, I visited on my trip.
He's awesome. But the ranchers were really perceptive, they were really interested, and they had generations of just getting stamped down and hurt in every possible mm-hmm. fucking way. Econo Alchemist did a. So it mostly wasn't Bitcoin. It was ranching. It was sustainable farming practices, regenerative agriculture, raising children, home births, homeschooling. But Eco did one presentation. I did a mining panel, and then I did a Bitcoin 101. And Eco obviously joined for the mining panel too. Eco gets up there and he's like, I'm not a rancher. I'm surrounded by ranchers. So I was like, how am I supposed to do this presentation? And he's like, well, one thing we can agree on is that the state hates us. He was just like, this is how the state has, I don't have to tell you guys how the state has trampled on ranching or whatever. This Bitcoin is this tool that can empower you and give you personal responsibility back, get back that individual power. And ranchers are the type of people that like everything comes down to them. Like they know mm-hmm. personal responsibility. Like one of the hardest issues with Bitcoin in the developed world is that just people have been groomed to not have personal responsibility in any aspect of their life. There's always excuses. We're a heavily litigious society. There's always someone else you can sue. Someone else's fault it is. Someone holding your hand. Some regulation telling you can't do something so you don't do it. But with ranchers and with activists, that's not the case. They live lives of radical personal responsibility already. So that is, to me, has always been one of the biggest hurdles. And that hurdle just does not exist on the ranching side.
Yeah, that's what I love about that community. And there's so many other communities, I think, out there that really get personal responsibility, proof of work. Like they're aligned to the ethos of how Bitcoin operates. Or I don't know how to put that, but how Bitcoin operates in kind of reinforces a certain ethos. It requires personal responsibility. It runs on proof of work. And ranchers get that innately. Their entire life is proof of work. You can't grow a cow without
exactly.
going out there every day and putting in the work. You can't bullshit.
You should have seen their eyes light up during the mining conversation.
Yeah, I bet that was super interesting.
And it made so much sense to them.
Yeah, because they get that foundation. But it's then my point about them not touching Bitcoin before something like this is it seems so foreign when you're not talking to someone who really understands it. Because when you hear about it everywhere else, you hear about it usually in the context of casinos and high tech and finance stuff. And that's just far out, something that they don't really want to deal with for the most part. But when you connect it back to what they do care about and their values, then they get it immediately.
Right. Yeah. You have to know your audience. I also don't think I think Bitcoin is falsely perceived, right, as being like a fintech innovation or something for finance bros. I've had so many people say that to me, I'm not interested in Bitcoin because I'm not a finance person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, that's why you should be interested in Bitcoin.
Yeah. That's who it's for.
Yeah. So I have an interesting, so I had this issue myself because I was like a very privacy focused Bitcoiner in the beginning. And I was very concerned about going to meetups when I was first getting into Bitcoin because I didn't know if I was going to get scammed or robbed or targeted as a Bitcoiner. Sounds like you were kind of the same way. What advice do you have for people that, maybe they're a NIM on Twitter, maybe they've never really had a face-to-face conversation about Bitcoin that is anxious about going to a local meetup?
I would say just start small. Start with the meetup organizer, maybe try to have coffee with someone, broach the in-person thing in a way that you feel comfortable with and steps that you feel comfortable with, and then go more and more out there as you get more and more comfortable going to meetups, meeting people, being a public face. I used a NIM on this trip, and that's just sort of the line between privacy and convenience. Right. I don't want to be so private.
It's a trade-off balance there.
It's a trade-off, yeah. And we talked about that at the meetup yesterday here in Nashville, it's all a trade-off. So when you think about privacy, it's very easy to go down the rabbit hole and be like, I need the cleaned up phone and the tails on my computer.
Right, the full extreme side.
Yeah, but it's so hard to really live life like that for most people. And for most people, it's not enjoyable to live life like that. So you have to figure out where's your balance there and to get more comfortable revealing selectively parts of your
identity. It's not all or nothing.
It's not all or nothing, exactly.
I think that's a mistake a lot of people make too, is that they think, and you see people like overexpose themselves because they're like, oh, well, this stuff is already out there, so I might as well go even more, right? But really, like, every little thing you do is there's this trade-off here, and you can balance it to a degree. And I mean, I I've met so many lifelong friends, you know, people that I consider family that I've only met because I was willing to step out of that box.
Same. Yeah. I went to a really interesting meetup in Costa Mesa, California, that's run by a guy who goes by Hedy Wook on Twitter.
Oh, yeah,
don't know his real name. Nobody knows it. And I interviewed him and he wore a mask during the interview, but at the meetup, he just said no pictures of people. You take pictures. I had the bike there and stuff. People were taking pictures of themselves or whatever, but do not take pictures of the group. And he talked a lot about BISC and different privacy tools and mixers and things. And that's kind of the focus of that meetup because he's super into privacy.
That's awesome.
But he's also a meetup organizer and he shows his face. But I think the calculus for him is like, look, people are not going to come out to this meetup to try an in-person scam just me because there's so many easier ways to scam than to...
It's a balancing act.
Yeah,
I really like the... basically no photos or videos of people without their consent as a meetup rule. It's something that Jay from New York BitDevs, you know, also a NIM, doesn't put his face out there or whatever, says no photos, no videos. It's something that he was very strong about to the point where, like, if someone new came to the meetup and they like pulled out their phone to take a picture, like the whole meetup would just like stop and everyone would just turn and look at them. Like the peer pressure was very, very strong. And we borrowed that like for Nash Bitcoiners, for the Nashville things. And it's definitely a balancing act because photos get you a lot more exposure. So it's the easy option is to just have no photo restrictions. But there's something really special in the, like this world that's like so, we just like live in this digital panopticon now where like all of our lives and all of our conversations, like we saw that happen during COVID where like all these conversations that were happening in bars and stuff started happening on Zoom and Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces, recorded forever, sometimes publicly broadcast as well. And just to have these like in-person meeting spaces where essentially this conversation's happening and the only people that know the conversation happened or what the conversation was were the people that were there at the moment, just seems so real and so special that I think people are sleeping on that as a line. Like, I'm not saying that everyone should do that. And there is a balancing act, like, this guy's awesome that started Knoxville Bitcoiners after he came to Nashville Bitcoiners. And he's like, this is awesome. I got to start one in Knoxville. And he takes pictures. He'll post like one picture per meetup and he'll just like black out everyone's faces. And then he gets that exposure out of the picture. But he doesn't actually dox anybody in the picture. And that's an interesting balance. We have Bitcoin in the comments saying phones are always listening, though. Well, I mean, I'm not against the idea of people putting, like having like Faraday boxes or something. Everyone turns off their phone and puts it in the box. Or...
That would be really cool if like the meetup organizer brought a little safe to the bar or whatever and everyone put your phone in there, not just for the microphones, but for the quality of conversation.
Yeah, so people aren't looking at their phone. Like I wanted, like we're going to have a bunch of different events at the park. And one of the things I've been playing with is like when you go to like comedy shows nowadays, a lot of times they don't want you to record the conversations because otherwise their jokes get old. So they have these things that are like, you just wear them around your neck. So you're holding onto your phone, but it's in a sealed bag. So you can't access it unless you go to the staff and the staff unlocks it for you.
Yeah. I've seen that at like sometimes at concert venues.
Yeah. I think that'd be great for like small Bitcoin events. Because everyone would be present, you don't have to, and people would feel more comfortable that like, oh, like maybe this person is secretly recording me, that they're not doing that.
I wonder if we could talk to one of those companies and talk to them about like, we'll give you a bunch of free press if you just give us a bunch of these bags, you know, for different, and we can hand them out at Grassroots Bitcoin. Like every meetup gets 10 bags or whatever.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm going to do that. I really like that idea.
Yeah.
Did you see, were there a lot of meetups that had a no photo policy or was it rare?
Kind of half and half, maybe. A good amount of the more established meetups had a no photo policy. I found that honestly, a lot of meetups, people were just too intent on talking to other Bitcoiners. They weren't really caring about photos. Like that wasn't why people came, you know? So the no photo policy was implicit. It's just no one takes photos anyway. So it's not an official policy.
I mean, it always, what really like bothers me is when people do like the, I'm at some like event or something and people do the, like the pan shot.
Yeah.
Where they like just, they like sit there and they just literally hit every single person in the room.
I just don't think Bitcoiners by and large are that kind of person that are clout farming on Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, I notice it just everywhere now.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed it in other circles, but I didn't,
like, I was just really at like the Music City Grand Prix or whatever, and like people are doing it all over. I was at the HRF's, you know, Oslo Freedom Forum, and like people are doing it in like in the crowd or whatever, and I was like, this is like completely out of touch. I do not,
yeah, that's the last place I would expect that.
And I'm like just sitting there with like my hat down, just like, turn off your fucking camera.
Wow.
Yeah, I like the no photo policy is interesting. I think people should do that more. And there's a mix there too. So the other issue is like, okay, a lot of people I think agree on no photos of the crowd, no videos of the crowd. But then it's like, do you allow pictures and videos of like if you're having a panel, like, or a presentation of the panelists? And then it's like, okay, well, if there's this great content, like, why are we limiting it to just the local people? And I'm like pretty torn on that one. Obviously I have a podcast that is explicitly public. Like it gets broadcast worldwide. But there's something to be said about the conversations are different when you don't have a camera and mic pointed at you.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the conversations, like, I wish we had captured a Nash Bitcoiners and posted online, might not have even happened if we were recording them in the first place, right?
Yeah, there's kind of a catch-22 there. Yeah. I don't know if that's the right expression, but yeah, there's certain things that when it's purposefully recorded, it just totally changes the nature of the conversation.
Yeah, and there's this other thing that, like, there's a reason why... So I've noticed that with podcasting, there's been a big push towards video. And it's because just people like seeing faces.
Mm-hmm.
All the incentives are aligned up in a way that, like, people that have videos of them and their guests, just, they do better on all these platforms. And what I've noticed is that, yeah, a lot of them, especially in the Bitcoin space, like if you go on as a NIM, they'll let you have your camera off. But it's almost like those people are penalized.
Yeah,
in that situation. So like with Dispatch, I've made it audio native. So like no one feels, there's like this peer pressure almost where like a lot of people have, I think a lot of people, myself included in the beginning, like our faces became public because we felt almost like this unspoken peer pressure to do it. You didn't want to be the only panelist or whatever, or the only person that had,
it's wearing a mask.
There's wearing a mask. Yeah. And as soon as you wear a mask, you look like a fucking terrorist too.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like inherently like criminalizes you.
Mm-hmm.
or at least like the perception. And I would just say like two items on that topic is that, first of all, if you're someone that's anxious about it, first of all, you know, speak up. You don't have to do it. You can not expose your face. A lot of people don't. But then second of all, like to people that are running shows and people that are running meetups, to be aware of this, like to make sure that people are like actually comfortable with going through with it and they're not just kind of getting pressured into it and don't want to speak up.
Yeah. Yeah. Always ask, you know, assume that people don't want to put their face out there.
I think that's a pretty safe assumption.
I like Bitcoin's comment that avatars could help. Pretty cool. Like, you know, you can do those Zoom backgrounds and on Instagram and stuff, you can do like face filters to have that kind of thing. I mean, it's not perfect, obviously, but because you're not controlling it, it's digitally done. So you don't know exactly what's happening behind the scenes, but that would be pretty cool because a lot of it, I think, with faces is you can see emotions.
People want to see like the facial expressions.
Yeah. It just makes it more live and interesting.
I mean, there's a reason why, like, we like have face-to-face conversations. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like trying to emulate that.
A little closer to that.
Yeah, no, avatars kind of make sense to me. I mean, I think that adds an element. I mean, I kind of, so like my tactic with Dispatch, obviously, is that like I have the live chat and the mempool, well, Wiz's mempool up. So like there's something going on the video screen. It's just not our faces.
Right. Yeah, I like this.
That's too. Like the trade-off. That's the trade-off balance I took here.
Or like on Rod's podcast on Building with Bitcoin.
It's a screen share.
Yeah. So you can pull things up and look at stuff without showing any faces. So there's still something to do there.
Yeah. I mean, we had a long conversation about this exact conversation before we launched that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a cool balance that he did.
Yeah. It's really nice. And it works well for the format of his pod, like showing what people are building.
I actually get Marty has been giving me a lot of shit on Rabbit Hole Recap because he uses like a really nice like 4K camera and I'm using like a $30 webcam and the reason is because I still to this day do not feel comfortable on camera, and I like that it's intentionally poor quality.
Yeah.
It's like okay, my trade-off is you're still going to see me, but you're going to see me a little bit blurry. It's not going to be
Marty and a handful of pixels to a pod.
He's like, Matt, is it a cost thing? Like, I'll buy you the camera. It's like, no. I like my webcam. dude, this has been a fucking awesome conversation. I think the freaks will find it very helpful. Before we wrap up, you know, I like to end it with some final thoughts.
Yeah, I guess my final thought would be start a meetup or join your local one. I think there's a lot more to in-person Bitcoin than meeting up at a bar and chatting with people. There's a lot coming out of this. A lot of circular economy, workshops, education, good friendships. I mean, like you said about having a family, after this trip, I now feel like I have a family around the world because not only have I met and stayed with a lot of Bitcoiners in the US, but Bitcoiners all around the world have seen what I've done. And now that's the first thing I think when I'm going somewhere. Where are the Bitcoiners? Because I want to meet them. They're going to be my local guides to the area and the people who I get to know the culture of that area, what I want to do in that area, and just have a friend on the ground. It's an incredible network.
I co-sign that. Go to a local Bitcoin meetup. If you don't have one, start one. If you do have one, you could still consider starting one. And Bitcoiners, it does feel like a family all around the world. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have one more question for you before we wrap up. To Bitcoiners that are considering learning how to ride a bike, what is your recommendation there?
Okay, so I had kind of a strange route to learning to ride. I got a motorcycle license in the US, but never had a motorcycle. So I did it's called MSF, Motorcycle Safety Foundation course. And it basically teaches you how to roll off zero and get to 20 miles an hour. And kind of lean over and do slow speed stuff. Doesn't really teach you how to ride a motorcycle. I think only experience can do that. As soon as I got the license, I moved abroad and I started riding in Southeast Asia. And that looks like a terrible place to learn, incredible place to learn. It's much, much, much safer for motorcycles than really? The US.
Because there's just so many motorcycles?
There's so many motorcycles. I think a lot of it is the kind of instinctual psychology of riding, other people riding motorcycles. Since most people are on a motorcycle, most people are in a t-shirt and shorts with flip-flops and barely a helmet on, if a helmet at all.
Right.
Sometimes they got a whole family on their back. So they have as much, if not more, to lose by hitting you than you have from hitting them or from you two colliding. So people are just
rather
much
than
more
like
aware.
A F-150 that can just like knock you off the road.
Yeah, driving in Dallas, you got F-150 just going 90 while they're texting because they don't care. Right. They're going to be totally fine if they run over a Prius or they run over you. They're not even going to notice if they hit you.
So your main advice for someone who wants to get started with motorcycles is to go to Southeast Asia and learn there.
To move. Halfway around the world. I mean, you can learn in the US too. I would say just go out of cities, go out into the country and learn on country roads where the drivers are, they give you a little more space. There's more room to breathe. Don't try and learn on the 405 in LA.
Right.
That's not the place to do
you're
it.
You're just going
to
die.
Yeah. You're going to injure yourself and invest in the safety equipment. It's worth it. Even if hopefully you never have to use it, but get a jacket. You can get jeans with pads in them that have Kevlar. So if you slide out, you're fine. Because normal jeans, if you slide out on the highway, they will burn out in about 2 seconds and then you're right on skin. Get boots, gloves, at least gloves and a helmet, and ride with that every time you ride. And that's the best that you can do to to help yourself if you do.
And have some kind of Bitcoin plan in place in case of a head injury.
Yeah. Yeah. Get your ducks in a row. Yeah.
Awesome, Sid. This is fucking fire conversation. I want to thank you again
for
joining me. And it's always a pleasure kicking it with you. I'm sure we're going to have many good moments in the future in person, face to face, which is awesome. I want to thank all the freaks for joining us in the live chat and who continue to support the show. Reminder, I will be going live with Rockstar in the studio in about 2 hours, and we'll be talking about a bunch of different things, including the Tornado Cash sanctions. So be sure to join us for that. Appreciate you all. Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace.